Welcome back to It's Haunted, What Now? I'm your host, Lainey. What draws you to the paranormal, the haunted? Maybe you've experienced something for yourself, something you've spent years trying to write off as a coincidence, despite a little voice in your ear telling you to look deeper into it. Go on, you know you want to. Maybe it's something you want to experience but never have. You urban explorers and paranormal investigators out there. Maybe you're a skeptic who just likes a good story and a strong shiver down your spine. Don't worry, we won't judge, as long as you don't. Whatever it is, you're welcome here, but we won't make the mistake of inviting any spirits in the same way. As we all know, though, the things that go bump in the night don't always need to be invited in. Today's stories all take place outside of the home, in workplaces or hospital rooms or hotels, where we really have no control over who comes or goes. Oh, and if you're an Apple subscriber, stay tuned after the credits for two additional stories. Okay, ready to get spooked? You probably remember that we left you on a bit of a cliffhanger last time, sorry about that, and you'll be thrilled and chilled to know that we're picking up right where we left off. Our first story contains three more tales by Fallen Saint, the prison officer who had more than one unsettling experience while on shift. I was about 3 years in as an officer by the point this one happened. I was working the third shift in the control center, which is where we monitor the cameras and maintain other security measures. There are other security posts around the prison, including several rifle posts around the perimeter, which are essential to the safe running of the prison, but we don't tend to use more than three of them during operational hours. In this case, it's important for you to know that when a phone is left off the hook in one of these rifle posts for a specific length of time, it automatically rings into the control center so that we can address the issue. When this happens, you can pick up the phone and hear anything that is happening or being said on the other end. This is important in case the phone was knocked off the hook or intentionally moved during a staff assault or a hostage situation. That night, I was working as the electronic monitoring officer, which means my main responsibilities were the camera controls and perimeter security. As I was working, the phone rang, and the institutional caller ID clearly displayed one post. This was odd because that post is not used because of its size. It is too small for a modern person to comfortably fit inside it. Even without that fact, at that particular time, nobody should have been near it. And for someone to reach it would have set off at least two security alarms. Since I was in charge of monitoring those alarms, I knew something was off. Given the fact that the guy who was doing the perimeter checks that night was a bit of a prankster, I figured it was probably just him playing a prank and that he somehow knew a way around the alarm sensors. So I answered the phone, but all I heard was static. It was continuously increasing and decreasing in volume, like someone had an old television on a static-filled channel and was moving the volume up and down constantly. I hung up the phone and moved the camera to look at the post so that I could see right inside. There wasn't anyone there, but even as I was still looking at the phone, it rang again, signaling an off-the-hook at one post. This time, my lieutenant, who was also in the control center, picked up the phone. After a minute, he walked back to me and asked if the perimeter officer was playing games, because he could hear mumbling blurred out by static from the one-post phone. He saw that I had the camera pointed right at it, and there was no one there. And he told me to have the perimeter officer check it, because an animal may have gotten in the post and knocked the phone off the hook. The perimeter officer took a while to reach one post, as he had been on the other side of the perimeter, and had to climb five flights of stairs to get there. During this time, the phone had continued ringing, and didn't stop until I finally saw the officer approach the post and open the door. The officer opened the door with his flashlight on and called over the radio to say that there wasn't even a phone in the post. My lieutenant responded that there must be one because the calls kept coming through. In response, the officer held a disconnected phone line up to the camera and told us nothing else was there. The post had not been used since the early 80s, like I said, because it was too small of a space. And yet, the phone would still ring now and again on the third shift, and kept doing this until we updated our phone system to an internet-based system. By the time of my fourth experience, I had been an officer for about 4 years. I was working my regular shift as the electronic monitoring officer when I went on a restroom break, which meant I had to leave my post and go about 100 yards away to the nearest restroom. As I was in the restroom, I distinctly heard the sound of boots clapping against the tile floor of the hallway that led to this restroom, as well as other rooms in that wing. As the sound got closer, I could hear the large Folger keys clinking together on their waist as they walked. When it sounded like they were right outside the door, I called out saying, "I'll be out in just a minute," and I didn't hear the sounds after I said that. Thinking someone was waiting outside, I hurried up and washed my hands, not taking more than a few minutes. I opened the door and there was no one there. The hallway was long enough that I should have been able to see where they had gone, and although there were other doors they could have gone through, I would have heard those open and close. They would have had issues getting out of the hallway noiselessly in the time between me calling out to them and leaving the restroom. I returned to my post and asked my sergeant if he saw anyone go in the wing while I was down there. He said he didn't and asked why. I knew he was someone who believed in ghosts since he had told me he used to do independent paranormal investigations, so I told him what happened. His face went slack and his eyes got large as he said, "Go check the video." I returned to my position and watched the video of that hallway, as well as the video of the hallway of the wing above that one, and the areas outside the wing. No one was in that area during that time except for me, and there were no signs of visual distortion. During this final experience, I had been an officer for about 6 years and was working my regular shift. I was watching the medication lines after the dinner lines were done, and my sergeant was talking with me. Not like a management thing. We were friends and just wanted to have a conversation to pass time while ensuring that prisoners weren't passing meds, fighting, or worse. The medical hallway I was watching is connected at one end to the rotunda, and at the other end to one of the main housing blocks, specifically right next to our main segregation unit. As we were talking, we heard what sounded like muffled talking from a radio. Checking our radios, we realized that it was not coming from either of us. Given the location, there shouldn't be an unattended radio, so it was a security issue and of some concern. So we began searching the surrounding area for the source of the sound. We quickly realized that the intercom system speaker for the segregation unit was making the sounds. This intercom, unlike a standard housing unit, was not used frequently, which is why we were surprised to find it transmitting sound. The sergeant pointed at it and said, "It must be broken. The switch is in the off position and the activation light is off." I looked closely and got goosebumps as I made a shocking discovery saying, "Sarge, how is it doing that when it's not plugged in?" I held up the unplugged cord leading out of the intercom box and gave it a slight tug to show it was attached directly to the box. The sergeant's face went white and he walked off shaking his head saying, "Nope, nope, nope. These intercoms don't have backup batteries and there are no direct power hookups. Just the cord that I had already shown was disconnected." The sounds continued for the duration of the medication lines. I left the area after that and I never heard anyone mention it doing it again. That's everything I've experienced, but if y'all would like to hear some of the other stories I have heard, just let me know. Honestly, I'm with your sergeant on that last story. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. And as long as everyone is safe and accounted for, that can be someone else's problem. And just why are there so many cords that are disconnected at this facility? We really need to talk about that. It really does sound like someone or something was up to something naughty, not good. And of course, blanket yes, we want to hear from you, from your sarge, and from any other people that are working in the prison that may have stories. Our second story is from Additional Doubt 243, whose career often takes them to unnerving places. I have been a critical care registered nurse for 22 years, and unfortunately, one of the responsibilities of that profession involves transporting the deceased to the morgue with a security officer escort. This is a trip I have now made several times. Generally, I don't find the experience to be creepy in any way. As far as I'm concerned, I'm merely transferring human remains from point A to point B. I usually feel some sadness, but this is something I am used to, and I've come to terms with it. But scared? Nope. Until one particular shift. One particular patient. This individual arrived in my unit in full cardiopulmonary arrest. He had already coded several times in the cath lab, and things weren't looking too optimistic for him. He had arrived as an inmate from the county jail, where he had cardiac arrested in his cell. Despite all possible interventions, we were unable to resuscitate him. Even though he technically had not been assigned my patient, I transported him to the morgue accompanied by a security officer, per protocol. The guard and I didn't really talk during the transport, and as it was a very large hospital, the trip took about 10 minutes. It was a long 10 minutes. As we pushed the cart down the hall that immediately led to the morgue, I was suddenly overcome by this strange sense of dread, like I was being watched. For some reason, I felt like the devil himself was walking right beside me. Every hair on the back of my neck was standing on end. Feeling like a paranoid freak, I said nothing to the officer, but I felt scared. After we deposited the body in the morgue, we were walking back down the hallway we came from. The sense of dread had completely evaporated. Then the security officer offhandedly said to me, "Were you completely freaked out, or is it just me?" I feel paranoid, but I felt like something was watching me, and it was evil. I nodded in agreement, and that was all we said about it. We found out later this patient had been charged with 200-plus known horrific crimes involving children and was awaiting sentencing at the time of his hospitalization and death. So in this instance, and if it were me, I'm very glad that the security guard kept his cool, because that would have forced me to be like, yeah, you know, you need to struggle through this. Power struggle through it and just keep walking down that hallway until you reach the morgue. And it was also nice that he was aware enough to reassure you that you weren't alone when you guys left the morgue. Now, speaking of not being alone, I don't think I want to know what came to accompany that body to the morgue, especially knowing what he had allegedly done. Ugh. Our third and final story for the main body of this episode comes from Red-Headed Strangest, whose father also had an inexplicable experience in the hospital. My father went into the hospital for his first liver transplant surgery. And when he woke up, his first words after the breathing tube was removed were quite insistent. He kept talking about someone named Brent, giving a specific last name to go along with it. My aunt and grandfather were in the room with him, and my aunt assumed my father was dreaming about someone they'd gone to high school with who had the same name. My aunt calmed him down and told him to rest, reassuring him that he could talk about it later. The morphine had been making him have some strange dreams and hallucinations before then, so it was easily dismissed as another one of those instances. That is, it was, until 2 days later when my aunt was reading the newspaper and came across the obituary of a stranger with the same first and last name my father had mentioned. She asked my father, who was much more lucid at this point, if he remembered mentioning the name when he came out of surgery. He replied very matter-of-fact that yes, like he'd tried to tell them. He'd met that same Brent, the one from the obituary, while having his transplant. Brent had been there when he went under and took my father to see a trailer where he had been shot and killed by his girlfriend's estranged ex-fiancé. Brent let my father know that his girlfriend was also injured, but she survived. He stood next to my father and sort of narrated the events as they both watched. Then, when it was all over, he asked my father to tell his mother and family that he was okay. This occurred in 1995, so newspapers and phone books were the best available tools for this kind of search. My aunt looked in the paper again and found the news story about the homicide, paying attention to the details. Brent was killed the day of my father's surgery, at the exact same time the surgery was being performed. It was too strange to not be true. But the question was, what to do with this information? My father obviously wanted to pass the message along, but finding this man's mother and contacting her out of the blue was out of the question. He hadn't believed in anything like this prior to it happening to him. Why would anyone else? So he sat with it for some time until he was released from the hospital. He decided to try contacting the detective that had been listed in the news story just to see what happened. My father recounted the information to this detective over the phone. The detective listened intently to my father's account, which included several details that were not included in the news releases. Surprisingly, the cop actually believed my father, but was still somewhat reluctant about putting him in contact with Brent's mother. He said he'd call back. When he called back, he asked my father where the suspect had put the murder weapon, because this was a detail that wasn't reported and, I suppose, couldn't easily be guessed. My father went on to describe the location, the specific bush it was put in, and its direction from the trailer. The detective said he would speak to Brent's mother and give her our number. It was up to her if she wanted to call. I guess it was a test and my father passed. She did call shortly after and my father was able to give her Brent's message. I was 15 when this all transpired. The man responsible for Brent's death had been apprehended almost immediately and was convicted. He recently had a parole hearing but is still in prison. This has definitely stuck with me throughout my life. I am a rational and skeptical person by nature. But having witnessed this series of events firsthand, I am reminded that not everything that happens in this life can be explained. My family and I used to talk about it from time to time, but over time I've lost them, starting with my father, my aunt being the most recent, and many others in between. I don't know what comes next or what this means as far as ghosts or spirits, but I know there is something beyond this life. And if Brent's okay, I imagine the rest of them are too. What an incredible experience to have. Going under for surgery and thinning the veil between life and death just enough for Brent to reach out and share his story. I hope his mother took comfort from his message, and I'm glad sharing this experience with your father has been able to bring you some reassurances as you've grown older, maybe even about the afterlife. Sometimes now after reading this story, I do remember times where, you know, I watched Unsolved Mysteries and saw these past life experiences or things that would happen when people would go under anesthesia. And I remember thinking, man, if I'm ever put under anesthesia, I hope that I have this type of experience so I can see if it's really real. Thus far, the one time I've been under anesthesia, that has not happened. But, well, I don't know. Maybe there's still time, and I hope there's not, unless I'm going in for a mommy makeover, who knows? Well, that does it for this episode. Unless you're an Apple subscriber, in which case, stay tuned after the credits, where you'll get to hear additional stories as a special treat. If you'd like to submit your own personal spooky tale to be read on the show, head to hauntedpod.com and click on the link to submit your story. You can also email me at hauntedpod@gmail.com. We thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast player of choice. It really does help. You can find us on Twitter at @podcast_haunted, Instagram at @itshauntedwhatnow, or at hauntedpod.com. Production assistance and writing assistance by Jesse Hawk from the Inky Paw Print. The official composer and audio smith for the show is Neeks at We Talk of Dreams. Check him out on Twitter at We Talk of Dreams or wetalkofdreams.com. Until next time.
Did you hear that?